because I don't think they were willing, at least the ones I talked to, weren't willing to talk about it. So you were way ahead of them, and probably because of the 50th anniversary of, you know, the plane being, I mean, being shot down, that he was able to talk to you about it. And I, you know, you were lucky to be able to have that. I don't think most of us had that honor, I guess, to hear what their lives were really like. And you got firsthand details. Lucky you.
Yeah, another thing I have that's pretty amazing, my dad wrote a diary while he was missing in action of his plane being shot down, which is absolutely riveting, which is in the book. And then my mother had kept all the letters that my dad had written to her during the war. And when I sat down and read those, it was just fascinating. My dad was really candid in what he wrote in those letters. He talked about bombing missions. He talked about what life was like on the base. He talked about what life was like in England and London at the time, talked about escapades of him and his crew. So it was unbelievable information that really formed the backbone for the book. But it goes into detail about what happened to each member of the crew, just not my dad.
How much luck do you think we'd have if we asked Fowler to create details about flying over Iraq and Afghanistan?
I know, we could ask. You think he'll answer?
You could ask.
You try it.
Ray, what when you listen to this about the conducting a war with your experience, and you listen to this, what goes through your head?
Well, the biggest thing, those guys told the truth, so any fighter pilot story today is about 10% truth, so we certainly over-embellish our accomplishments to make ourselves look good. You know, the biggest thing, I look at this and the respect of those guys, especially because they had to grow up so fast and they were so young going into combat. And, you know, even now I think a lot of people, you know, they see their 18-year-old drive off in the car and they wonder if they're going to make it back, you know, where these guys went off to war, you know, 17, 18, 19, and just an unbelievable responsibility. I think the big takeaway of today in flying, you know, flying over Iraq and Afghanistan and having the opportunity to do what I've done is the fact that you could take a single airplane and a single bomb and do what and accomplish with that what they sent hundreds of airplanes and thousands of bombs because of the precision. I mean, today we don't miss. It's you know, it's an amazing capability to be able to do that. You know, especially now collateral damage being really important, not to hurt people that don't need to be hurt. So, you know, that's the biggest takeaway on that. Obviously, the B-17 had the Norden bomb sight, which gave the precision bombing, and you know, most people know about the Norden bomb sight, very guarded secret of World War II, and it did the math. So, it just, you know, from my standpoint of doing manual bombing in an F-16, which the computers are doing all the math, when we still practice manual bombing because there's a utility, we may do that, but most of the time we're doing everything GPS-guided munitions these days. But the fact that they could drop a bomb from, you know, the high 20,000, low 30,000 foot range, and that bomb could land anywhere even close to where they planned for it to hit, that's amazing in itself. However, you did have to drop, you know, sometimes thousands of bombs to accomplish the objective for that mission, to knock out the factory and to really slow the war effort for the enemy. So, you know, that's my takeaway again. And we're relatively protected now. I mean, it's I've had some very exciting, adrenaline-filled missions in combat, but for the most part, we're very protective. We fly above the threat. You know, we run around in an air-conditioned cockpit, which is pretty nice. Whereas
you run around in the F-16 cockpit.
We run around. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
So it's just, you know, I can't imagine going out and, like, we're talking about the numbers of 1 in 4, like with Hal Weekly at the start of your program talking about how 1 in 4 aircraft with 10 men may not come back, you know, and you just wonder if this is your day. You know, I think today we don't go into the air thinking we're going to lose. It's a totally different landscape, and you know, hats off for those guys to wake up every day and not just that, but to lie about their age so they can get in to go die for our freedoms, and that's what they did every day. Everybody was part of the war effort. So, you know, it is a different footprint these days from you know, you wouldn't see anyone protesting in World War II about anything. I mean, they're trying to get in and do their part, you know, for all of us. And again, and you still see that very patriotic today for the young people that are signing up and enlisting to go fly and fight. But I tell you what, I'll take an F-16 in my odds in that airplane today than I would a B-17 or even the P-51 those guys. It's just it's amazing. I'm amazed when they jump out that they're able to even get found and make it back, you know, and all the resources, like you're saying, to come get them. So at least now when I land, they know where I'm at with a satellite looking at me, which is pretty nice.
After we finished our conversation, ladies and gentlemen, Connie Boland's going to be here. Ray will be here. The gentleman will be here. If you'd like to ask questions from the stands of them about the airplanes, they'd be delighted to hear your questions. So then one last one to you, Ray. You knew how to fly when you went to Air Force training. What was the reaction from your instructors when they found out that you already knew how to fly?
Well, I was well briefed to not tell anybody I knew how to fly. So make no mistake, even though I was flying P-51s and B-17s, even when I went to pilot training, I went with a little over 3,000 hours of flying time. I went in and didn't say a word. So they're there to teach you how to fly, and create a little bit more issues for yourself if you go in and you think you're ace of the base, especially for the new guy that just came back as a first-time instructor. You know, so they're there to hammer you, and but they obviously knew I had some experience. I was very lucky, and then, of course, they would ask me what I flew, and, of course, I downplayed it. I fly Cessnas, and which worked out real well. And, of course, towards the end of the flight training, I gave one of our instructors a ride in the P-51 right at the end of pilot training, so they were like, okay, we get it. It's an amazing experience to go through the military training and to really see it from the other side. Again, this morning we got to go fly, and to step out of a World War II airplane and go step in a modern airplane, it's a nice, enviable position to be in.
Ladies and gentlemen, Colonel Ray Fowler, Charlie Valera, Steve Snyder. Thank you, gentlemen. And Connie Boland. There's Connie Boland.
There's Connie Boland.
You're on.
Thank you, all of you guys. So we'll open it up to questions here in a few minutes. Ray, you want to step over to this big bird here and maybe tell us a little bit about the missions and tell me how much fuel does it... I told him I was going to ask him a hard question that he couldn't answer, but I don't think that's possible with Ray. He's been flying them so long. Tell me about your scariest moments, how much fuel range. Tell me something that the crowd wants to hear.
Specifically about B-17, right? So today we have 1,700 gallons of gas on the airplane, so you can go a long ways. Combat, they had an additional 1,000 gallons they could put on, so very, very long range airplane, of course. And today, this airplane is, again, almost exactly like it would be in World War II. You know, the engines are identical to what they flew in World War II. And I don't know what to tell you other than the fact if you've flown a Piper Cub, this is a 4-engine Piper Cub. It's very easy to fly. It'll embarrass you. You can bounce it down the runway a few times, which I've done quite often, but very easy to fly.
We can get current in one landing, right?
One landing,
you get three in one.
Which, yeah, I've done.
And Ray has been known to fly with a girl every now and then, so that's a pretty scary moment in a B-17, right?
That I have. And in fact, Connie flies, we've been flying P-51s together up here, but we also get to go fly the B-17. And I put her on the spot. She had not flown one for... How long had you flown before? Been several years, I guess.
It'd been several years.
So I put her on the spot and made her land in front of thousands of people at an air show, and she did a far better job than I did after not touching it for a while. So
he was such a good guy. He's sitting in the thank you. He was sitting in the right seat on that particular occasion. He said, "Now don't mess this up." The Blue Angels were at this air show, but the funny part of that, he had kept the rental car keys in his pocket, and we had gone to another airport just to test fly this B-17, and as it turns out, we found out he had the keys in his pocket, and they said, yeah, go ahead and come back, and you can land. The FAA guy comes out to the airplanes. We don't shut the B-17 down. We threw the keys out to the FAA guy, and we took off again.
Cool.
So it's been a lot of fun. I have to tell you that Ray does fly everything out there, and the F-16, his service to the country in Iraq, Afghanistan, and what the Alabama Guard does with their Red Tail program. They have a scholarship program in Montgomery, Alabama. I'm really, really proud of that unit there. This is not for me, though, Ray. Tell me something.
Well, I'll tell you really about the quick plug with the Liberty Foundation. So a lot of people are familiar with the Greenland Expedition, where they went in the ice and brought the P-38. So the founder of the Liberty Foundation, Don Brooks, his father was a tail gunner in the B-17, and he had passed on years ago, but he wanted an airplane as a tribute to his father. He restored the Liberty Bell. So have you guys heard of the B-17 Liberty Bell? We had a fire in 2011. landed in the field successfully. Everybody got off the plane, and the fire trucks weren't able to put the fire out until the airplane was fairly consumed. So we're rebuilding that airplane and a second airplane down in Douglas, Georgia. So, which is why we're so happy that the Erickson Collection was able to give us this airplane and let us take it around the country. But Don Brooks is an amazing person. You know Don, obviously, and just inducted in the Georgia Aviation Hall of Fame. Actually invented the golfer that went down in the ice to pull the airplanes out. So he makes me sound like a northerner, actually, with his accent. He's down in South Georgia, but just incredibly bright, and came up with that concept to bring the airplane. He was actually there to bring the B-17s out. There's still three B-17s down in the ice, 275 feet in the ice, but they were completely crushed. They were 4 feet tall. So the wow. P-38 did come up, and it flies today. It's one of the most authentic P-38s. It is the most authentic P-38 as far as original airplanes, since I think they had less than 20 hours on them when they went, ended up on the ice cap in Greenland. But that's why Don does what he does as a tribute to his father and all the veterans. And again, this airplane, we don't give rides here at Oshkosh, but we do out on the road, and goes to Erie, Ohio on this weekend to go fly. In fact, I see my driver, John Shuttleworth, is flying the airplane out tomorrow. He's another accomplished Warbird pilot and flies everything as well. And they'll take the airplane out and just look, find a schedule, come fly with us, and be involved. That's what we ask. We love volunteers. That, like she said, this all survives off of volunteers, and people want to donate their time and talent to keep these airplanes going and keep programs like this going. And thank you, Connie, for everything you've done. I wouldn't be flying these airplanes if it wasn't for Connie Boland, and that is an honest truth of why I'm able to do what I do.